this out loud, it's going to sound rough at first. But was there any part of you that was hoping Bevo would stick it with the horn?
You're listening to Talk Sports.
Stick him with the horn.
Yeah. Stab with the horn.
He's a dog.
Airing every day.
Noon to 3.
You wanted to see Uga get stabbed on live television?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I never said I wanted to see it. I asked you if any part of you did.
No. Zero part of me did.
Zero?
This is the sickest
thing. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Any part of you, thumbs up from Ben Lee.
Parker?
Quick thumbs up from Parker.
You people are sick and disgusting.
On 1340 WKGN.
There wasn't a little part of you that wanted to see, like, you know, just get stuck a little bit.
Stabbed by a horn. No. No part of me wanted to see that.
Hour 2 kicking off in the Fan Run Studios. Before we get to headlines, I want to say we had one gang member reach out that said they preferred me to Cody through DMs. Did you see that DM?
That guy wasn't really in a gang.
He might have been. You don't know that.
He said he's from Farragut. No one in Farragut is in a gang.
If he would have said he liked you more, you would have probably felt differently about it. But
well,
just saying
true.
The scoreboards won nothing in terms of...
He's just
who
saying that
because
he really wanted something and I didn't give it to him.
Well, that makes it seem weird. Hour 2 headlines. Cody McClure, Collision Course, right now.
Thanks, John. LeBron James.
LeBron James. I'm getting sick of that, to be honest.
That's a thing we do sometimes.
I know, I'm getting sick of it.
No, I love that.
Chris Johnson, before you give a headline, here's some breaking news. Cam, hit the horn, please.
Woo, 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 woo.
Chris Johnson tweets out, false news with 5 exclamation points.
False news?
Yeah, not fake news, false news.
I feel like that's even faker than false, or falser than fake.
False news, he says.
Faker than fake.
He is saying he did not hire, I assume he is referring to the accusation that he hired a hitman to kill two people. He is saying that is false news.
Well, LeBron James.
I'm not doing it again.
Says closure will be tough if the Lakers season doesn't resume. After his 17th year in the league, which was shaping up to potentially be an all-timer, came to a screeching halt, of course, because of coronavirus. LeBron says it would be hard to accept an incomplete ending. I don't know if I'll be able to have any closure, he said Wednesday on a video conference call with the reporters. So LeBron is hoping the season will come to an end. I want to have some satisfaction on what our team has been able to do this year, having a first-year coach, first-year system. So many new pieces. He basically, you know, he doesn't want it to end like this. He wants to have a shot to win a championship with this team.
Yeah, I mean, this really might be the last shot for LeBron James. Like, or when I say the last shot, this might be his best last shot, right? Like this
right,
year.
Right.
Some would say next year he'll have a better chance just because year two you can usually fill out the roster a little bit better. With some salary cap stuff, like his year one in Miami was a lot. The team didn't have the role players that had in year two, right? Like I believe like Mike Bibby and Carlos Arroyo were his point guards that year, and then they upgraded the following year. You got guys like Mike Miller to come in,
right? Right.
But at LeBron's age, he doesn't have too many great years left in him. When I say too many, like three at most, like at this level.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, if he does it, you know, for three more years, that would be uncharted waters. So, yeah, like as far as closure and as far as his best chances to win a championship. Because if you're LeBron, you probably haven't closed the doors on getting to 6 rings, right?
You got to win them pretty quick.
No, I mean, you have to win them the next 3 years. But you, if you're LeBron James, you probably feel like a three-peat is possible with you and Anthony Davis.
You, as a competitor, yeah, he probably feels like it's possible.
LeBron knows when he has a championship caliber team, right? Like he knows that, especially, you know, this year while the West is without Steph Curry and the Warriors.
Yeah.
But if you get that first one and, you know, those guys don't come back and, you know, I'm just saying, like, if you win one, you probably feel like you could have a chance, an outside chance. It'd be hard. I don't think he's going to get 6 rings, but I'm saying LeBron probably thinks he can win these next 3. Ty Michael Jordan.
I'd be cool with him just getting one more.
I think most people would be. The biggest LeBron fans would be cool if he just got one more. You get 3 with 3 different franchises. That's
impressive. That's something nobody ever did.
Yeah, that's really impressive. And again, I don't think anyone has done that.
three different. No, there's no way, right?
There's only three guys who had done it with two different teams, right? And in terms of like being the reason, being the finals MVP and all that, like Robert Horry, Steve Kerr, they might have done something like that.
Some support guy.
Yeah, maybe. But like as far as being the lead dog on three different teams, three different franchises.
Nobody's ever done that.
Because it was just Kareem, LeBron, and Kawhi who had done it as finals MVP for two different teams, right? Wasn't that the list last time?
Yeah, because that was a stat they put out last year. Kawhi joins LeBron and Kareem.
That's the only guy to win finals
MVP. After he won the,
right.
Yeah, I remember that stat.
Yeah. So one would be really big for LeBron's legacy, but I'm just, as a competitor, when he played this year, I guarantee you he's thinking I can still get to six.
Yeah, I guess Kawhi could do that eventually.
Kawhi could as well, yes.
Maybe, yeah.
Doing it in back-to-back years would be really
damn
impressive.
Yeah, it would. The Rams are past due on paying Todd Gurley his money. Todd Gurley says, at RamsNFL on Twitter, past due. Send me money ASAP.
Clay Matthews, co-signed, said, yeah, they've laid on mine too.
Yeah. They're not paying out the money, I guess, right now.
Yeah, it's something I was reading saying the Rams feel like they're in the right here. Like, I don't know if that means like they're not going to pay because there's some offset language in the contract. I don't know, but Todd Gurley says he needs some money.
Paul Kaharsky says the Titans are all the way in on the Jadeveon Clowney chase.
Okay.
I feel like we knew that, didn't we?
I'll be honest, it was nice to have some reassurance after the news came out yesterday about Seattle being unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, had teams started offering more money and teams started getting soured on it and scared away. I got pumped when I saw the headline that the Titans were still all the way in.
Yeah, that's good. A reporter.
All the way in. Bring me the clown boy. Give me the clown!
A reporter yesterday at the coronavirus presidential press conference briefing asked the president if he would pardon Joe Exotic from Tiger King for
this
was in the middle of they were asking questions about the coronavirus. And one of these guys asked the president if he would pardon Joe Exotic from Tiger King. And President Trump said, I will take a look.
There's a little bit more. He's talking about how his son had talked about it. And at first when he said that, I was like, Baron? Is Baron watching the Tiger King? But then Donald's like, it had to have been Donald, right? Talking about Junior.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, it was. He's like, yeah, I knew.
What a question to ask.
Well, there was something about pardons. I think they were talking about. I don't know what the hell they were talking about, but yeah, it was really weird.
Yeah. Did you see this?
I'm going to look into it, though.
No, you didn't see it because it's from Darren Rovell.
I did not see it then. I am blocked.
I found this interesting. Wimbledon reportedly paid $2 million a year for pandemic insurance the last 17 years. They totaled $34 million they paid out in pandemic insurance. So for this year's cancellation as a result of coronavirus, Wimbledon reportedly will receive $141 million from their policy.
That insurance company has to be sick.
Yeah.
It was all fun and games when they were getting those $2 million checks.
Yeah.
They have to be sick now.
Now they're paying out $141 million.
So you said they've paid $2 million for how many years?
17 years.
So $34 million.
They paid in $34 million, and they're going to receive $141 million from the policy.
They didn't like raise their prices? I feel like $2 million 17 years ago is a lot different than $2 million a day, right?
Yeah.
They're getting a discount these years.
Same you thing think with the insurance company would charge more over the years?
Well, no, I just mean like the value of $2 million. Yeah, like I feel like if it was $2 million 17 years ago, it should be like three or four at least.
I guess I think of it like car insurance. I thought maybe their rate would go down a little.
Okay,
I don't know. I don't know how all that works.
I don't know. I just feel like $2 million 17 years ago is worth a lot more than $2 million today.
I would think it is, yeah. Well, yeah, they like you said, it was all fun and games. They were collecting those checks.
So them and the NCAA of March Madness had some insurance money to help offset that. And now it makes sense why Wimbledon didn't care about rescheduling. They're like, you know what? Let's just go ahead and get this. We've been waiting to get this $141 million check.
I wonder how that compares to the annual like Wimbledon, like what they would actually have made.
I would say it's more, or I'd say it's about the same. I would say that's kind of what the
We would just need some Wimbledon revenue numbers,
I guess. I would say that's probably how they figured out is how much money they would have made last year, and you get kind of the equivalent of that,
close
I would say,
that.
Right?
Yeah,
isn't that how insurance usually works?
I don't know.
They generated $289 million in 2017.
They generated that, but like they paid out a bunch to winners and stuff, right? Like
probably.
I would imagine there was some expenses.
Some overhead there.
Yeah.
Between paying the.
Read more into the article.
See if you can find what the profit is, because.
Yeah.
Generating $280 million is different, because, I mean, I know they have pretty big purses for the. You know, you get paid per round you win. So, I mean, by the end, I would say the purse was well into $60, $70 million at least.
Yeah. When you say.
On both sides.
When you say generate, that makes me think total revenue.
Yeah.
Like, so
I agree with the generate. So, see if you can find that, even if it has to be later.
This day in history.
Was it $280 million? I mean, was it the profit?
I think it's close to that. Because it's talking about the U.S. Open had a $60 million advantage over them in revenue that year.
Are you looking at Forbes right now?
Yeah. And the Open made $335 million in revenue, it says. And it says it had a $60 million advantage on the Wimbledon. So I don't know if that's...
That still wouldn't count.
Yeah, it's still saying revenue, though. It's not saying...
I would think that they
Revenue
subtract.
Would be what they made.
Like, a gross revenue is what you just bring in.
Yeah, they're not being very specific. Hold on.
Profit. I would think they would list it as profit.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Once you pay out, I don't know how much they pay to winners, but this day in history, by the way, Robert E. Lee surrendered at the Appomattox Courthouse, effectively ending the Civil War in 1865 to Union General Ulysses S. Grant. You remember that?
Yeah.
I heard a little bit of that. I was looking up this. It says that Wimbledon, the... Award a purse of over $49.4 million. Yeah. And that's equally among men's and women's. So I was off on that. Men's, women's, and doubles competition. So that was 2019. They gave out over $49 million to winners. Okay. Now, what were you saying about Robert E. Lee?
He surrendered on this day in 1865 at the Appomattox Courthouse to General... Ulysses S. Grant, which effectively ended the Civil War. I've been to Appomattox.
Yeah?
I went with my grandparents when I was a boy.
Was it cool? Or?
It's not really cool. It's just kind of a place in Virginia that's a place.
Okay.
It's like a little cabin-looking thing, and there's other little huts and things around there. They preserved it.
I did find the revenue number.
Okay.
In 2018, they made... $52 million pre-tax.
Okay.
So yeah, they're getting a nice little upgrade this year.
Wow. So the profit was $52 million.
Yeah.
After everything's paid out, so now they're going to just collect 141.
Yeah, which I mean, some of that's going to, I would imagine the profit Cam was after still not only paying the winners but also paying the officials and the people who run that year round. So
yeah,
some
over.
I'd imagine they generated this year $336 million, and then
had
a pre-tax profit of $52 million.
Right, so. And that was after probably paying, like I said, paying out not only the players but also paying out all employees and grounds crew and all of that. So, of that $141 million they get, there's not going to be as much overhead because they didn't have a tournament. But the officials are still going to get their money.
Yeah. Don't have to pay winners, though, I guess, and that's probably nice.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little surprised the winner of Wimbledon only gets basically $3 million. But I guess they also earn money each round they win. $57,000 for round one, $91,000 for round two, $140,000 for round three. So I imagine they bank all of that up there. So I guess that makes sense. It's a lot of money. Wish I was good at tennis. That'd have been cool. Yeah, the headlines, good batch.
Ellen DeGeneres is facing backlash for comparing her self-quarantine to being in jail. We are beginning to cancel Ellen. It looks like she's getting canceled.
Oh, no.
All of a sudden, she doesn't have her riders at home making her look likable anymore.
Yeah.
We just get to see the real Ellen.
For who she is.
Yeah. Good. Good. Talk sports on Fan Run Radio. Some NFL draft news coming out today about the Detroit Lions. Apparently, the Detroit Lions are open for business at number 3. I don't guess that's surprising, but they're basically telling Miami, hey, at the very least, if you want your choice of Tua, if you want to have the second quarterback coming off the board, you better come up off of some draft picks to move up two spots. The Detroit Lions officially hold the leverage because I don't think Cincinnati will do anything crazy with their pick, and I think that Washington is going to quickly select Chase Young. So the draft that starts 2 weeks from today, right? Two weeks from today.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks to the day, we'll be in full draft mode. The Detroit Lions say, hey, we are the start of the draft, and our third overall pick is up for grabs. If you want Tua, or if you want one of these stud defensive guys, we're open for business.
Did you see the guy, Mike Tannenbaum? You familiar with him?
I'm familiar with the name.
The ex-Dolphins personnel man.
Okay.
He said he was quoted as saying recently that it would be irresponsible to take Tua in the top 10.
He said it would be irresponsible?
That's what he thinks.
What's irresponsible about it? Because to take him in the top 10? Like, I get if you're saying, like, hey, if you take him at number one, that's irresponsible. And, okay, I agree with that.
He says Miami shouldn't even consider Tua in the top 10 at all.
Why would Miami not consider Tua? Like, Miami's in a pretty good spot of building for the future. This is the ultimate build for the future move.
He's worried about the medicals.
Yeah, he's concerned, very concerned about Tua's medical history.
But again, if you have three first-round draft picks, I don't think you have the same amount of pressure on you as someone with only one chance to get this right. Is that fair to say? Like, is that fair? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You have three shots, and you know they might could even do, and I wouldn't even be that mad at the Dolphins if they did it, do what Washington did with RG3. Do you remember RG3's draft?
Not in detail, no.
Well, they drafted RG3 at number two overall, and then they ended up drafting Kirk Cousins in the fourth round.
Oh, yeah. They drafted two quarterbacks.
Right, and they're like, you know, Kirk Cousins will be at least a backup in this league, and he'll be a cheap option. If RG3 gets hurt running around, we will have some backup, and that's exactly how it played out. Kirk Cousins didn't win much in Washington. I believe he got into the playoffs, right? They lost that one playoff game to the Packers.
RG3 never did that, did he?
No, he did. They lost to Seattle.
Oh, he got him to the playoffs?
I believe his rookie year, and then when he blew his knee out, like he got hurt in the playoff game because Dan Snyder is cheap and let the field go to hell, and RG3 got hurt by Seattle on their terrible turf. I believe that was his rookie year. So I wouldn't be like, with as many picks as Miami has, like if you want to take Tua there, like I wouldn't have a problem if in the second or third round they also took another quarterback. Just because we know the most valuable thing in sports, we say this all the time, most valuable thing in sports is a cheap quarterback that can play.
Yeah. Apparently former GM Mike Lombardi echoed his remarks. He's kind of said the same thing. He said Tua is brittle and that you can't deny it, citing his history of ankle, hip, and wrist injuries.
No, I mean, he's been hurt. How concerned are you for Tua? And are you convinced that he's not going to hold up in the NFL because, you know, he got hurt at Alabama with having more talent than everybody, but he also played a different style of football. So, like, if you coach Tua and you say, look, dude, you can't do this in the NFL anymore. You have to take care of your body.
I mean, he does have a history of ankle, hip, and wrist injuries. Three separate areas of the body. And some guys are just like that, you know. Some guys are more prone to injury, I think. So, in the NFL, I mean, it's a different game.
I still can't get over Nick Saban leaving him in that Mississippi
State. They were up, what, 35-7?
And he had convinced him on the sideline, give me one more drive. Like, you have to protect the player from himself. Like, that's just so sickening. And Nick Saban hasn't gotten enough criticism for that.
No, he hasn't. He hasn't, and that was classic Nick Saban, just caring about himself and caring about his, you know, his championships. And I'm sure Tua wanted to win a championship, but
it was just him caring about his message of like, hey, we don't take games off, we don't take plays off, we got to keep playing 60 minutes because of the kick six and all this stuff he tries to do. But like,
the game was in hand. I mean,
it not only cost Alabama their season, but again, you have a quarterback who is, who had injury concerns before.
And people are trying to argue that Alabama needed the style points as if they had not earned the reputation.
Right.
Like, Alabama would have gotten in with Tua. I don't think they needed style points.
Well, here's the thing. Style points against Mississippi State didn't mean anything.
Yeah, what's the difference in 35-7 and 49-7?
The style points against them is not important because you could have put Mac Jones in and still scored points. It wasn't.
Yeah.
That's a stupid argument.
Yeah, it is.
If they beat Auburn, you know, with Tua, if you go and beat Auburn, that's enough of a style point to go and win that game on the road.
I think they would have been in.
And I was on record last year saying they weren't going to get in with Tua, which
right.
I don't know if they would have or not, but if you're Nick Saban, it wasn't going to be style points. Like, beating Mississippi State by an extra two touchdowns doesn't get you in the doesn't get you in the field one way or the other. I would imagine you agree with that, too.
Like, yes. They needed to beat Auburn, maybe handily with two. Maybe sure. Beat Auburn by two or three scores or something.
Yeah, but, like, the difference between 35 and 42 wouldn't have been the difference.
Not against
them getting
Mississippi
in.
State.
Or even against Auburn. Like, if you don't win by 10, win by 17 or 20, and if that happens, that's a different story.
It might have – style points might have helped against Auburn if you just absolutely blew them out
sure.
versus winning close,
sure.
you know, but not against
but
Mississippi
But I'm saying
State.
Like the difference between five touchdowns and six doesn't matter
right,
in almost
right, yeah.
any game.
Yeah, especially against a team like Mississippi State that wasn't any good. So, yeah, that was
– it's crazy to me that Nick Saban doesn't get more criticism for that because
yeah.
this is staying with Tua. And I don't – look, Mike Lombardi got fired for a reason. Like, Mike Lombardi is a failed GM.
Mm-hmm.
Tannenbaum, failed GM. Or fell, you say, as a president or GM? What was he at in Miami?
He was a former personnel director.
I know Lombardi was a GM. He was running
Oakland. They just call him ex-Dolphins personnel man.
Okay.
But they also say he was one of the most prominent decision makers in recent Dolphins history.
Okay, well, look where the Dolphins are at.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, what they say doesn't carry much weight to me. Bill Polian was actually successful at building teams. He was really good at building the Colts. And what he says doesn't carry weight with me because he's old and over the hill. Like, you know, that's why whenever he was telling everybody, oh, Lamar Jackson should be a wide receiver, I'm like, this is an old, senile man. Like, they should quit propping him up on TV as some type of expert. The game's
That's the old black quarterbacks can't throw mentality.
Right. But these guys, again, that was Bill Polian who was successful at building teams. These guys not successful at building teams. So I don't care what they say at all.
Yeah.
But Nick Saban putting Tua in this situation to where now people are saying he's not even a top 10 pick, that just seems crazy to me because, again, before Joe Burrow exploded on the scene, Tua was the clear-cut number one. And I don't even know, as good as Joe Burrow was, would he have been a clear-cut number one if Tua was healthy? If Tua hadn't hurt his hip? Like, I feel like Tua probably is still ranked ahead of him on draft boards if Tua didn't hurt his hip.
Oh, yeah, I think it would be a Jameis Mariota kind of debate where he's like, oh, it's almost a coin flip.
Or even a Baker, like Sam yeah. Darnold type of thing, which, you know, Tua was a better version of Sam Darnold. But Baker was someone who was unconventional. Like, Burrow's bigger than him, but he's older and only has one elite year, whereas Tua would have had two or three. So I think it would be a coin flip, like you said.
You got to think, too, they both had so many special receivers. Like,
oh, yeah.
Tua had more weapons, but, like, Ja'Marr Chase may have been – the best one. You know what I mean? In terms of just LSU may have had the best player there. They both had a number of weapons, though, so it's hard to know for sure.
You think Chase is better than Judy?
Than Jerry Judy?
And Ruggs.
It's hard to say.
Wait, isn't Justin Jefferson, isn't he the stud?
He's
I thought he
the
was the stud LSU.
First.
They're both stud. I mean,
I think Chase isn't eligible for this.
Okay,
draft,
so Chase is still in the
He's a sophomore. I think he's a sophomore.
I feel like Chase and Jefferson are two, like, they're obviously just as good as the Alabama receivers, but I think Bama's got more.
Bama's got a projected like first-round pick as well.
Yeah, Chase is a sophomore, like you said. But he had 1,780 yards and 20 touchdowns.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
that's ridiculous.
He'll be a first-round pick, too. But, yeah, they were talking about Justin Jefferson. I saw him on NFL Live this weekend where he was talking to McShay and Kiper, and they were laughing about him running a 4-4 at the combine. And you combine that with the way he catches, and like, yeah, now he's definitely a first-round pick. And they were laughing, saying they thought he was going to be slower than that.
Those guys may be better than Judy. I don't know. But the thing is, you get to the NFL, like, it's just hard to say until we see them, like Tua and Burrow, because they both have had a ton of weapons in college. But these NFL DBs, these corners, like, are just – it's a different level. And the D-line's coming at you. It's a different level, a different speed of the game. So, I don't know. I'd feel a lot better about Burrow now for sure. I mean, I can see why these guys would say you got to be concerned. I wouldn't call it irresponsible to take him in the top 10.
Again, for the Dolphins, who have a plethora of picks, I don't think them taking a a project or even a high upside guy, which is what you would probably consider. I mean, I would guess. I guess if you have injury concerns with Tua, he has low floor, high ceiling, right? Would that be the way you? Because if he stays healthy, he's going to be good, and if he gets hurt, he's going to be out the league.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if the Dolphins don't take him in the top 10, where does he go? You know,
could go number 18 to the Dolphins. Like maybe they're saying the Dolphins, if they take him at 18, then it becomes value because they have three picks.
Right. Maybe they're thinking of it that way.
But you'll have some team take him in the top 10 just because quarterbacks are too valuable.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks are too important, and getting the right one on a rookie deal that can come and win you games by year two is just too valuable to pass up.
He's awesome when he's healthy.
So. Now, you could make the argument, like, to me, saying drafting Tua in the top 10 is wrong. Or saying drafting Tua in the top 10 is irresponsible, I think that's wrong. But if you say, like, hey, Miami trading a bunch of picks to move up two spots to get Tua, I'll listen to you there.
That would be irresponsible?
Yeah, to say that that's irresponsible and, like, Miami shouldn't do that, I'll listen to you there. Because I would rather take my chance at three, you know, two elite skill players or two elite linemen, two elite other position players, and then take a flyer on a quarterback with my third pick.
Like, if he's there, take him, but don't try too hard to go get him.
Yes.
Yeah.
So stay at five? Y'all saying stay at five?
If I'm Miami, I would. Unless the cost was like, we swap third-round picks or something like that. Because Detroit, I don't know what other teams are going to trade up, you know, be willing to give a whole bunch up. I think the days are gone. You've seen, you know, what the Rams had to get up for Goff. What the Bears had to give up for Trubisky to move up a couple spots. Like, I don't think teams are still eagerly doing that, especially for a guy with injury concerns. But maybe there's a sucker. There's a sucker in every draft. So maybe there would be a team. I just don't know how many. We've gone through the list of franchises, right? When we look at the landscape of what Cam Newton and, you know, Jameis Winston are dealing with, there's just not a lot of quarterback starving teams. One of the teams I'd be worried about drafting Tua ahead of me would be Detroit. Since, I mean, like, the days of Stafford might be numbered. Like, they might want to trade up to get ahead of me, but they're already at number three. The other team I guess I would be worried about is at number six.
Yeah.
Chargers are at number six, right? Like,
yeah.
The Chargers might hop you. So, like, I'd be a little worried about that, but.
I think that's the only team they really have to look out for. So it's just. Kind of how much of a threat do they think the Chargers actually are?
But if you're the Chargers, like, if you're the Chargers, does that make sense for you to do that for Tua either? Because you're at a weird spot with your franchise right now. Now, granted, you might need a star. Maybe you could sell Tua as a star. He is from, quote-unquote, the West Coast, being from Hawaii. But you could sell him as a marketable star. But if he – you can't really afford to risk and gamble. Because if you draft a dud in Tua, that's going to sink your franchise. If you're the Chargers, right? I mean, who is already struggling to move to L.A.? Like, that seems like that would be detrimental to give up assets to go to number three, draft a quarterback who might not be ready to play this year, and then he might get hurt when he plays. To me, the only team that I wouldn't have a problem with would be the Dolphins. But again, I'm not giving up huge assets to move up two spots. I will just stockpile assets and then maybe try to trade for – you know, move up to get Trevor Lawrence next year, or try to just, you know, work it out. Find a Cam Newton, find a guy that we can just kind of keep piecing this together. Take somebody in the second round. Take Jordan Love at 18. I'd rather have Jordan Love at 18 than, you know, trading up and trying to maneuver for two spots in the draft.
Yeah, I agree. Shoot, yeah, I would even take Herbert there at five. Maybe not at five. No, I think he'll go at six, though. I mean,
The Chargers are going to take Herbert, is what everyone's saying. I mean, that feels the same West Coast thing, right? I mean, him being from
whatever quarterback Oregon. I think is available at six. Yeah, they're taking him.
Herbert to the Chargers.
Yeah,
seems like a good fit.
Herbert has a chance to be successful. I don't know if I think he'll be successful, but he has a chance. And if you take him just at six. Without having to trade up to do it, like that tells you a whole different story. That's a whole different, you know, level he has to reach. He can just be solid for you at that point. Husker's got, you know, Herbert has athleticism. In the latest CBS mock draft, they have Miami taking Justin Herbert. Mm-hmm. Says there are too many injury concerns for the Dolphins. They have Tua going 6 to the Chargers.
I mean, that would be a good spot for Tua. I mean, sit behind Tyrod for a year.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I don't know. Can you sit behind? That's the thing, is when you look at the actual scenario of sitting behind a quarterback for a year, kind of goes back to the conversation we had in an hour one with Jeremy Pruitt. Anthony Lynn does not have the cachet to to tank a year. So, like, if Tyrod Taylor is giving you 4 or 5 wins or 5 or 6 wins, which, you know, I don't think he's a quarterback who can get you to the playoffs. He did in Buffalo, so maybe he can. But I don't think in 2020 Tyrod Taylor is moving the needle enough for you in that regard. Anthony Lynn, do you trust him to have the patience to sit Tua?
Maybe he'd be good to go halfway through the year, and you're going to get him in there and, you know, kind of get the fan base excited. Yeah, just show hope.
For me, if I'm the Dolphins and I'm at 5, if I'm a Dolphins fan, like I guess I could talk myself into Tua. But, I mean, I would be just fine with taking Derek Brown from Auburn, right? Putting him on my defensive line. Taking one of these offensive linemen, just building through the trenches and just waiting. Then you get down to 18, and there might be some quarterbacks left. Or you can trade up a little bit before, you know, Jordan Love or somebody goes off the board. And you just stockpile as many young, elite players as you can get from the SEC or from wherever. Because, I mean, Jordan Love in this draft has the number 19. He's going number 19 to Oakland. So, I mean, he's going to be there at 18. And then even the second round, if you wanted to gamble with somebody and gamble with, you know, I don't really like Jalen Hurts' prospects in the NFL. You take your chance with him. You take your chance with Fromm, Eason, someone like that. You know, I've seen people saying the Patriots are going to end up with Fromm.
I've been saying that. It just seems like a guy they'd take, in my opinion.
They said they would trust him to come in, be able to run the offense.
Don't make mistakes unless he's playing South Carolina.
And there's no NFL team in South Carolina. So
yeah, so he may be all right.
They're not really worried about it. There's a couple of interesting things here. You know, the draft's always based around the quarterback. Like, that's always the talking points of the draft. Now, this year is going to be also wide receiver heavy. But it always comes down to the quarterbacks. It'll be fun to see how it plays out. All right, so you said, Cody, you had something from the LA Times. Bill Plaschke, your boy.
Oh, yeah, Bill Plaschke's got a take.
Well, I mean, he's just California. Bill Plaschke screams LA. You're LA, Cody.
He's not my boy.
Bill Plaschke, one of my least favorite participants on Around the Horn. I always root against Bill Plaschke. Has quite the take for the sports landscape on how to deal with Rona. We'll dive into that next. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio.
Your pet.
Back on the program. All right, give me Bill Plaschke's take here as he has a plan for how sports can come back in America.
Bill Plaschke says we should put sports in a timeout until 2021.
Oh, no.
He says listen to the doctors, listen to the science, forget the coaches, forget the GMs, forget all these guys, and let's wait till 2021. Ignore the leagues, mute the coaches, and listen to the science, is the way he put it.
Listen to the science.
He says we should bench the sports world until 2021.
Well, what's the science behind that? Like, what is the science saying something that I'm unaware of?
Well, he goes in to talk about a development of widespread utilization of an effective vaccine is probably many months away. And because serological testing of those who have immunity to the virus is at least several months away, the clock has run out on the current and upcoming seasons of this country's major sports. You keep waiting for someone to say it ain't so, but all the evidence says it's absolutely so. He references Dr. Jeffrey Smith, who addressed the Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors. He said he did not anticipate any sports games until at least Thanksgiving, and we'd be lucky to have them by Thanksgiving.
And that's without fans as well?
Oh, yeah, I would assume. He said this is not something that's going to be easy to do. Apparently, Dr. Smith came as close as anyone to saying what many have been dreading, but as Bill Plaschke puts it, it's time to start accepting this. Just as everything else in our world has been inexorably altered, so too have sports. They're not invincible. They're not immune. It's never over till it's over, but this feels pretty much over. So he's got a pretty negative outlook on it. Says the NBA is probably done. The Lakers and Clippers seasons are almost certainly ruined. Look at the China Basketball Association, which has already postponed a scheduled restart and is now looking at a minimum four-month shutdown.
Yeah, China got a little too aggressive when they were coming back, apparently, saying they were going to be back, and they just kept pushing it off, and now next thing you know, they're just like, you know what, this is going to take a lot longer than we thought. But again, China playing by a little different rules when it comes to how honest they've been regarding the virus and how bad it's been. So if it's been as bad as the numbers that we think are coming out of China.
Yeah, he points
you know, the urns and the ashes and the cell phones that have been shut off. Like if we think there's been more millions of deaths or you know hundreds of thousands in Wuhan, 50,000 in Wuhan and you know maybe a million or so across the entire country, they're playing with a different set of rules than the U.S. should be, where the U.S. is still looking around. I mean, it's gotten over 15,000, but
it's still not 100,000.
Yeah, it's still much, much lower than we were all bracing for. Now, again, if Bill Plaschke wants to say fans can't come to the stands, I'm not going to argue that point because I don't know how we are going to do that when it comes to putting 30,000 people, 25,000 people for basketball games back into arenas and 100,000 people back in to football stadiums. That seems like a reach to me.
Well, he also asks why he said ESPN reports the league is exploring action to return to action through the use of rapid response blood tests. But if the efficiency, how do you say that word? Efficacy? Like effectiveness, I guess, is that what that? Even if the efficacy of those tests is proven,
why you're asking me like I know any words?
You were saying big words yesterday.
Yeah, but I had to Google those.
Like you know some big words. I thought you might know efficacy.
I know big words, but I don't. I know what efficacy means, but I don't know how to
say it.
I
feel like that's definitely how you say it.
Okay. Well, then I would imagine that's the effectiveness of it.
Yeah, I think that's what he's trying to say. Let's just use effectiveness. Even if the rapid response blood tests are effective,
the ability to produce a desired or intended result. So basically, the effectiveness.
Yeah. Why would NBA players be the first in line over millions of other Americans?
I was always so much better whenever I would do like ACT prep and stuff like. Knowing what the words meant, I could usually get that right.
Mm-hmm.
But pronouncing them, pulling them out of my brain to use
right
on a fly was always tougher. But if you give me a word, I could usually
figure out what it means. Yeah,
especially like in context, obviously.
Just may not use it in conversation correctly.
Right.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. But basically, he asks if these tests are proven effective, why would NBA players go to the front of the line?
Millions of dollars.
Over millions of other Americans who need to get back to work.
Millions of dollars both ways. And look, again, this is what the conversation I'm talking about from a couple days ago. How important are sports? Right? That was a question I asked a couple days ago. How important are they? What do you think the average American, how do you think they feel about the importance of sports? Not the sports fans. How important do you think the average American views sports as?
The average American?
The average American.
The average American is probably a sports fan, aren't they?
Maybe. I mean, I would say they have at least somewhat of a respect and somewhat of an interest level. Now, obviously, this is all on a spectrum, and you have the huge live my life by it, the huge people who – and then on the other side, you have people who are like, oh, this is stupid. Give money to the arts. We can't waste money on sports. We got to send it to the – give it to the college professors who
but
are
the
really
people in the middle, I think the average American likes sports.
Okay, but I mean, like, you know, the – enough. You have to get to a certain point where the majority is just so heavy that the other 25-30% of people that are opposing it get kind of outnumbered.
I think more people in America like sports than don't. Do you think that's all people considered? Not saying they're fanatics.
I would say they have some of an interest level, but I don't think if you ask them, hey, should sports be prioritized, I don't think half the people would say yes.
I agree with that, but I just mean like or dislike at its core. I think most people would say,
more
yeah,
people
I
like than dislike, but I would say there's probably a larger number of people that you're not taking into account that would probably be like, eh, don't really care either way.
Right. I would say that the passionate people that would care and would prioritize sports is probably a low number. 25% of Americans.
I would say that the number that oppose them are even lower than that, though.
Yeah, and then there's a big middle ground.
Right, they're just like, no, they're stupid, they're a waste of time, right. We should care more about science and math. Like,
yeah.
That'd probably be 10 or 15%. So the question is, like, how big is the percentage of the people in the middle that you could convince to be okay with coming back?
Right.
And how many of those people would look and say, you know what, I don't really care about sports, but damn it, I just want life to get back to normal.
And
I want people to have an escape. I want to have things to talk about. I want people to have joy. I want America and the country and the world to feel like it used to feel. How many of those people can you get on your side to say, you know what, we need sports back?
Sports are a key part of that, basically.
Yeah, sports are a key part. Whether or not I love them, whether or not I care about them, whether or not I'm a fanatic, whatever, we need them as a country because it's just what our country is, right? I mean, because sports are a big deal to our country.
Yeah.
When you look at the money, right? When you look at the money that people get, there's a reason NBA players get $30 million. Because the demand is there. The revenue's there. The profits are there. People are willing to pay to watch these guys and pay to go to the games.
Right.
So there is a demand. Like, whether or not it's the right thing, it's the wrong thing, and whether or not, you know, we should have prioritized science and math more, you can argue about that. But the point is, in 2020, we care about sports. Our country cares about sports. Just check their pay stubs.
We will have to decide how much we care. Like, how important it is that they do come back.
Because to answer Bill Plaske's question of why they should be prioritized, I would say because millions of people want to watch them and millions of people get some type of joy or feel some type of normalcy from them being back, right? Is that not the answer to Bill's rhetorical question?
Yeah, probably. Then he goes on to talk about baseball. The number of players and personnel involved in each game makes it more difficult to restart than basketball.
Now, that is something that's going to have to be, you know, prioritized, and that's something you are going to have to figure out in terms of how many people is it actually going to take to run these sports. And, like,
and
can you ask them to go and be quarantined up for 3 months?
The people who are not the players.
And because those people don't make millionaire money.
Right.
So what can the leagues do to incentivize?
You need to pay them good money.
Incentivize? Is incentivize a word?
Yeah.
Can you incentivize them enough, either through bonuses or threatening their jobs or whatever you got to do? Can you get those people who are maybe making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 an hour to leave their families for 3 months?
A year.
Sure, yeah. I mean, like, can you get them, you mean leave them for a year?
You said $60,000, $70,000 an hour.
Oh, yes, a year.
Yeah.
Okay, I got just going to say that. Well, they're only going to leave for 3 months. But, yes, can you convince them, guys who are salaried at, you know, good money but not life-changing money? If you ask most people who make $50,000, $60,000 a year, hey, go leave your family for 3 months, I don't know how many would say I would do that. You know what I mean? I don't know how many people would say, you know what, I'm okay with that.
No, you need to have a way to incentivize them probably, you know, with some extra money. Say we'll give you an extra $40,000 this year or something. That might be too much. We'll give you an extra $10,000 or something.
Some hazard pay.
Yeah, you got to do
some hazard pay. We'll give you an extra $10,000 for the 3 months you're gone.
You got
to
do something.
And I think, you know, like that would make – would I move away for 3 months for $10,000 to do my job I'm already doing, that I'm already going to be on the road for half the time anyways? I would probably do that and just say, hey, sorry, it's just something we got to do.
Yeah, and a lot of those people probably do want to get back to work, like to,
and they don't want to lose their jobs, and like it's going to be one of those things like where you can't really fight back because you don't want to be the squeaky wheel because the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and in this case, the grease is getting the hatchet, and you're fired, and you get replaced. Whether or not it happens immediately, or whether or not your just contract doesn't get renewed because your company's not going to forget about it, because your company is not going to want to lose hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right, and they're going to get rid of people like that before they get rid of, before they stop paying athletes.
Right,
you know. So,
the athletes are much more valuable in this equation.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, you can't play baseball in the winter, obviously. So he goes on to talk about a lot of things.
You could play – well, yeah, I mean, baseball – well, I mean, what is the point there? We know baseball can't be played in the winter. That's why they're saying they were going to try to get it done by November.
Yeah, he's just saying basically he doesn't think it's going to happen. He says football is also probably done, at least for the calendar year.
No, that's where he's wrong.
The NFL can make headlines with free agency and a virtual draft, but none of those players will be allowed to hit the field until the late fall. College coaches can spout all they want about their kids being tougher than any little old virus, but they aren't.
See, this is where Bill Flacid is losing me because we're going to play football.
That's his name.
We're going to play football.
The best case for football would be a season that starts in January and runs through spring.
That is not the best case for the NFL.
And pros. Sounds drastic, but is that such a bad thing? When looking for real optimism here, perhaps that is where we should train our eyes on the potential excitement in sports' new realities. Can you imagine a Super Bowl in April? Maybe the week after baseball's opening day and a week before the Masters? How about a college football season running concurrently with college hoops? What about a national championship football game on the Sunday in the middle of the Final Four? He doesn't seem to cite a whole lot of evidence here other than this one doctor.
Sure. And I mean, look, it's effective. You are trying to get people talking. You're trying to get people thinking. So
now, there is a second doctor he talked to, Dr. Neil Etelatrache, who is the team physician for the Dodgers and Rams. He said it's going to be tough. I think it's medically feasible you could reopen the three sports this year, but to have any sort of normal fan experience will be extremely difficult, well, if not impossible.
See, that's look, I have no qualms with that.
That's what the second doctor
says. Second doctor is where I'm lined up. Like, I think you're going to get sports, but I am not sold that you're going to get fans in the stands. And that seems really tough for me to think of 4 months from now, 5 months from now, where people are going to be willing to line up and sit together, piled on top of each other. Now, you're not wrong, Cody, in the sense that some people will be champing at the bit, ready to go because they love their sports that much. And I do think you'll have some people do it, whether or not they're allowed to, or whether or not they do it in sold-out capacity, I just don't see.
This doctor went on to say that for the sports world to return with fans, it will require a vaccine. I think you're talking about well into the fall until you can widely disseminate a vaccine. In the meantime, he said it's possible for players to return. They need access to antibodies tests that could determine if someone is immune to COVID. And, you know, we've heard about all that in these press conferences.
Sure.
But then the doctor says that's the bridge to the vaccine. That's the key to make those tests widely available. That's critically necessary to play this year.
See, again, play, I just disagree with. I think you do prioritize these leagues. I do think you prioritize normalcy. Mm. You saw that from the president, right? As he called a meeting last week with the commissioners of the league saying, we want to get back to play. You are prioritizing that.
We may not have fans in football stadiums this fall.
Again, that's, if you take anything away from this, if you take one takeaway from me, that's my take. Is that I'm not sold that we get fans in the stands. I hope I'm wrong. There's time for me to be wrong, but that's where I'm at right now.
Man, that's going to suck.
It's better than no football for me. If you disagree with it, I would understand. But for me, it's better, and that's where I want to be at. At least having that. At least give me the sports. Hour two's in the books. Hour three, we'll have headlines. We'll have some this or that. Stick with us. This is Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.
Hi.